Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark LeVille, and you're bringing you an hour of mystery. Later on, it's the adventures of Philip Marlowe from 1950, but right now, Dragnet. First heard on NBC on January 25th, 1955, this broadcast also transmitted via Armed Forces Radio. Jack Webb stars in the story, The Big Bounce.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a forgery detail. For the past several months, a man posing as an actor has been passing worthless checks in your city. You've got a description of the suspect, but no lead to his whereabouts. Your job, get him.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Tuesday, January 10th. It was foggy in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of forgery division. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Welsh. My name's Friday. I was on my way back to the office from a cup of coffee. It was 4:12 p.m. when I got to forgery. The squad
I told her to report it herself. Told her it was her duty as a citizen. It is a duty, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Mrs. Nescott, this is my partner, Sergeant Friday.
Ms. Nescott?
No, Sergeant.
Seems Mrs. Nescott's mother got stuck with a bum check, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
She's a landlady out on Western.
Well, not a landlady, exactly. Only rents a couple of rooms, more for company than anything. Dad left her plenty to get by on.
Yes, ma'am.
And we'd help her out if it was necessary. Dick and me. Dick's my husband. We'd help her out.
Mm-hmm.
So far, she's managed pretty well by herself, but if she pulls any more fool stunts like this... Sony has a $3 bill. See right there? No such account. Big as life. Stamped all over it.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't understand it. I just don't understand it at all.
Well, anybody can take a bad check, Ms. Nescott, no matter how careful they are. Even with good identification, you can be fooled.
When they do, they report it, don't they?
Well, yes, ma'am, usually.
Look at the date. Way last December, over a month ago.
Yeah.
Over a month ago, and she hasn't done a thing about it. Didn't intend to, either. Didn't even want me to know. Good thing I started early this year.
Early, ma'am?
On her income tax. How I found out about the check.
Oh.
I used to work in a tax office, so I always make out Mother's return. If I didn't do it, I don't know who could. Doesn't keep any records. Just stubs and a few bills. Well, someday they'll audit her and she'll find out.
Well, why didn't your mother report this check herself, you know?
You tell me. The man had an honest face. That's about all I can get out of her.
How'd she happen to take it?
It was supposed to be for his first month's rent.
Well, and she's not out any cash.
Sure she's out cash. $20. That's what she's out. He made the check for 70. A month's rent's only 50. Not a lot of money, but $20 is $20.
Yes, ma'am.
There's a principal, too.
Yeah.
An actor or something like that.
Ma'am?
The fellow gave it to her. Mother says she remembered his name from the movies. That's how she happened to take the check. I don't see why she'd trust an actor any more than she would somebody else.
Can I see that, please?
Mm-hmm.
Parker Allington. You ever hear of him, Joe?
Allington?
Uh-huh.
I think it sounds familiar. It was in pictures when I was a kid, I believe.
Huh?
As I remember, I never cared much for him, though. If it's the same guy, the parts he played.
What do you mean?
Heavies. We ran the name Parker Allington through R&I, and we turned up one package listing a drunk arrest in 1935. We called the Screen Actors Guild to see if they could help locate him. They said they'd check, and they asked us to call back in an hour. 4:30 p.m. We left the office and drove out to the Western Avenue address Mrs. Nescott had given us. It was a two-story Spanish stucco with a rooms for rent sign in the front window.
Somebody's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Miss Crimp?
Yes.
We're police officers. This is Frank Smith. My name's Friday.
Police officers?
That's right, ma'am.
Anita.
Beg pardon?
My daughter, Anita. She sent you.
Yes, ma'am.
I told her not to. She never does anything I tell her. Never has.
Be all right if we come in?
Oh, living room's a mess.
Don't worry about it, ma'am.
And I was just putting away the ornaments from the tree. It was raining last week when I took it down and I couldn't get out to the garage.
Yes, ma'am.
I won't press any charges.
Well, that's up to you.
Not against that poor man, I won't. And you can't force me to press charges.
No, ma'am. Suppose you tell us about the check.
Isn't much to tell.
Your daughter says this man Allington gave it to you for rent.
Here, let me get that box out of the way so you'll have some place to sit.
I'll take care of it, then. All right, I'll put it here.
Oh, yes, fine, thanks.
Mm-hmm. The check was for rent, is that right?
That's right.
When did you take it?
Last month sometime. A week or so before Christmas. The date's on it, isn't it?
December 9th.
Well, that's what it says.
Have you ever seen Allington before? You ever met up with him?
Not in person. I may have seen him in pictures. He said he'd been in a lot of pictures. He seems familiar.
Well, now, ma'am, how'd he happen to come here to rent a room?
We saw the sign out in front in the window. He was living in a hotel downtown, and was out this way visiting friends.
Did he mention the name of the hotel?
No, I don't think so.
What about the people he was visiting?
Well, what about them?
Well, did he tell you who they were?
He may have. I couldn't say for sure. Not now.
Now, you said he saw the sign.
In the window.
Yes, ma'am.
He came in and asked about the room, but was still for rent. I showed it to him. Upstairs in front, a real nice view.
He agreed to take it, did he?
Straight off. Said he used to live in a house something like this when he first came to California years ago when his wife was alive. Sort of reminded him of better times. That's how he put it.
And he gave you this check for the first month's rent?
Yes. I suppose Anita already told you. He made it out for $20 extra.
Why was that?
Well, he needed some cash money to hire a cab and move his things out here.
And you gave him the cash, hmm?
$20. Well, I couldn't turn him down.
Why not?
Well, it just seemed honest, that's all. You can tell when a person's honest.
Yeah, sometimes.
And he was so anxious to get the room. He wanted to be all moved in time for the holidays. He wanted to be with people, I suppose. Oh, I felt sorry for him.
Did you ask for any identification?
Oh, no, there wasn't any reason. I recognized his name. Besides, he was going to be living here. If there wasn't anything wrong with his check, he'd be around to make it right.
And you never heard from him again?
Now, that doesn't mean he was trying to cheat me.
Well, it looks that way, ma'am.
Now, you folks are policemen. It's your job to suspect people of being crooked, and I don't blame you. It's your job.
Yes, ma'am.
$20?
Ma'am?
$20. Is that reason to throw a man like Mr. Allington in jail?
Well, it might be more than $20.
Well, that's all I gave him, don't you believe me?
Yes, ma'am. This man has passed quite a few checks.
I told you before, I won't press charges.
Yes, ma'am, you told us.
You don't understand. He didn't mean any harm.
You sure about that, Miss Crimp?
I'm a pretty good judge of human nature. I ought to be by now.
Yes, ma'am.
He's had lots of trouble, Mr. Allington.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of trouble. An actor like him probably pulled down a fancy salary and never had any worries. Now it's all gone. All his money, his wife, everything. Well, if he'd never been rich, it wouldn't be so hard. You don't miss something you've never had.
Yeah.
If you're finished with me, I'd like to get on with my housework.
Mind if we use your phone?
Well, it's in the hall. I'll show you.
That's all right. I'll find it. Thank you. You know, I didn't mean any offense, Mrs. Barron.
Oh, I suppose it's just your job. There's some cookies there while you're waiting.
Oh, I'd like to, but no.
They're homemade. They
look very good, aren't they?
Oh, go on. Go on.
Miss Breckhardt, please. I'll wait if you don't mind. Thank you. Hello, Miss Breckhardt. This is Sergeant Friday. I spoke to you a little while ago about Parker Allington. Yeah, that's right. He asked me to call back. Uh-huh. When was that? Oh, I see. Yes, it certainly does. You bet. Thank you very much. Bye. Goodbye.
I remember this kind when I was a kid. My mom used to make it for Christmas.
Oh, well, maybe you'd like to take a few home with you. I've got plenty extra.
Well, thanks anyway. They wouldn't let me inside the front door if I showed up with an armload of cookies. You ready, Joe?
Yeah. We'd like you to come with us, Miss Crimp.
Me? Well, what on earth for?
I want to see if you can identify the man who gave you that check.
You mean you've already arrested him?
No, ma'am.
Well, I don't understand.
Well, we want to show you some mug shots, some photographs.
You want me to pick out Mr. Allington's pictures?
If you can.
Now, that's silly. You don't need me for that. The studios must have pictures of him and newspapers. Why, that's downright silly.
It wasn't Allington, ma'am.
What?
The fellow who passed that check.
What'd you find out?
Allington died 3 years ago. Miss Breckhardt at the Screen Actors Guild had checked with a motion picture relief home. They reported that Allington had lived there from 1949 until a heart attack caused his death several years later. We managed to convince Mrs. Crimp that she'd been taken by a professional swindler. Down at City Hall, we showed her mugshots of known bad check artists.
No, that's not him.
Oh, how about this one?
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure not. That's not him either. He's older.
Well, the picture might be out of date.
Even so.
Well, that's it. Well, Miss Crimp.
Yes?
Could you describe him for us?
Well, he was medium sized, a little taller than you are, maybe.
Yeah.
How old would you say he was?
Oh, about my... in his 60s.
Gray hair?
That's right.
Any marks or scars?
No, not that I noticed.
How about his eyes?
Beg pardon?
What color were his eyes?
Well, I couldn't say. He was only there for a few minutes.
Yes, ma'am, I understand.
He just seemed like an average man for his age. Gentleman, nice looking, sort of distinguished.
Anything else about him?
No, except for his expression.
What do you mean?
He was kind of sad, unhappy, like he'd been through a lot. Yes, that won't help you, though.
Right.
Is that all?
Yes, ma'am. We'll take you home now.
Officer.
Yes, ma'am.
Would you mind doing me a favor? I'd appreciate it.
What is it, Miss Crimp?
Don't tell my daughter about all this. I mean that it wasn't Mr. Allington, that I let somebody trick me. She'd say it proves that I'm not able to take care of myself. I'd never hear the end of it. She treats me like a child as it is. Now, you don't have to tell her, do you?
No, ma'am.
I'd sure appreciate it. Not that she doesn't have my best interests at heart, but nobody likes to be criticized all the time, especially by their own flesh and blood. You got any children, Sergeant?
No, ma'am.
Well, then you don't understand how I feel.
Yes, ma'am. Maybe I do.
You couldn't.
We drove Ms. Crimp to her home, and then we checked out for the night. By the end of the week, two more landladies in the Western Avenue area had reported receiving bad checks from a man who claimed to be Parker Allington. Their stories tallied almost word for word with what Ms. Crimp had told us. January 13th, 4:45 p.m. Frank and I checked back into the office after an interview with one of the victims.
You'd think that guy would wise up. Can't go on using a dead actor's name forever. Somebody's going to catch on.
Well, they haven't so far.
No, sooner or later.
Thought you were on a diet.
Huh?
Thought you were on a diet.
Well, Joe, I got to keep up my strength.
Yeah.
Person needs a certain amount of sugar, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so high on calories. Read an article the other day. Teaspoonful of sugar, only 35 calories.
You lost any weight yet?
No, I'm all my own.
You haven't lost any, though?
No. I don't want to get thin, Joe. Just sort of watching it, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Forgery, Friday. Yes, ma'am, this is the right extension. Could you speak up a little, please? I can't hear you. Now, just a minute. All right, go ahead, please. That's 2238? Yes, ma'am, I have it. Yes, ma'am, right away. Well, looks like you had it figured.
How come?
Somebody did catch on. A woman over near Los Feliz Boulevard.
Yeah?
Fellow's trying to give her a phony check.
Trying?
Yeah, he's still there. Frank and I drove out to a side street just south of Los Feliz Boulevard. It took us 20 minutes to get to the house. When we pulled up in front of the place, a lady was standing on the porch. She spotted our car and walked down the steps.
You the policeman?
Yes, ma'am. My name's Friday. This is Frank Smith.
Hello, how are you?
How you doing, ma'am?
You certainly didn't hurry.
Well, the traffic's kind of heavy this time of day.
Well, why didn't you use your siren?
We didn't want to scare him off.
Well, it's too late for that. He left about 10, 15 minutes ago. Oh, I'm Daisy Willikers. Suppose you need that name for your record.
Yes, Mrs. Willikers.
Not Mrs.
Oh.
You see which way he went?
He took a bus on the corner, probably in Hollywood by now.
Well, why'd he leave in such a rush, you know?
Got suspicious. Might have heard my phone call. I had to talk so loud to make you understand me. I tried to keep him here as long as I could. I did my best. You can't ask more than that.
No, ma'am, thanks.
Well, you might as well come inside. Suppose you want a full report. That's the regular procedure, isn't it?
Are you familiar with police procedure, are you?
Watch it on television, go to the movies. They got it all down pat.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, he came up to my door. Oh, must have been an hour ago by now. At least an hour.
Yes, ma'am.
Asked if I had a room for rent. I told him that's what the sign said. He just laughed, like he thought I'd been making a joke. Didn't know I was serious.
You show him the room?
Well, I tried to. He hardly even glanced at it. Then he said this was exactly what he'd been looking for. That's when I first began wondering about him.
What else did he say?
That he used to live in a house like this when he was a little boy back east, and that it reminded him of home. I figured he was softening me up to get me to lower the rent. Well, two can play at that game.
Yes, ma'am. What did you do?
Well, I upped it $10. Room's not worth a cent over 45. I asked 55.
Mm-hmm.
That way I'd be able to come down when he started playing on my sympathies. Wouldn't be out anything either.
Yeah.
Didn't bat an eye when I told him it was 55. Said he'd take it, just like that. I knew right away something was wrong.
What happened then?
Well, we came downstairs into the living room here.
Go ahead, please.
Well, Well, I said I wanted the first month's rent in advance. A lot of them try to pay you by the week. Before you can turn around, they're behind. Takes forever to get rid of them once they're moved in. I always insist on a full month.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, didn't bat an eye at that either. Brought out a checkbook.
Now, did he ask if he could make it for a little extra?
How'd you know?
Well, he's been around before.
25 extra. That's what he wanted. If he'd been around so long, why haven't you picked him up?
Well, we're trying, ma'am.
A few minutes earlier this afternoon, you'd solve the whole case.
Well, we're just as anxious to solve it as you are, Ms. Wilkerson.
Did he say why he needed the extra cash, ma'am?
Something about cab fare to get his things out here.
That's a lot of cab fare.
That's my own words, right to his face, exactly what I said. He said he'd have to clear up his hotel bill, too. Claimed they wouldn't take a check if he was moving.
And that's when you called up.
Of course not. Didn't call you until I was sure the check was no good. Not that I would have cashed it. But there's no point in running to the police until you got the facts to back you up.
Mm-hmm. What made you so sure it was phony?
Well, the way he signed it.
What do you mean?
Parker Allington.
You knew he wasn't Allington.
Well, how could he be? Allington's dead. You didn't know he was dead?
Yes, ma'am, we knew it.
Well, then?
Miss Wilkers, are you connected with show business?
I follow it, that's all. Oh, I don't spend all my time reading movie magazines or anything like that. But I keep up with what's going on in the field. Do you know Allington was on television last night?
What's that?
The Late Show. Picture must have been at least 20 years old. He played the villain. Did a good job considering it was 20 years ago. Gives you a funny feeling, though, watching somebody who isn't here anymore.
Yes, ma'am. Now, as soon as you saw the name Allington on the check, you realized the guy was a phony and called us. Is that right?
Well, approximately.
Approximately.
Well, I told him I didn't know if I had the cash in the house. Said I'd have to go upstairs and make sure. I got an extension phone up there.
I see.
Then I telephoned you.
Uh-huh. One more thing, Miss Walters.
Well?
We've got a description, but it's rather vague.
Description?
Yes, that this guy's been passing himself off as Allington.
Oh.
All we know is his medium-sized gray hair and fairly well-dressed.
Well, that's about right.
Well, it's not very specific.
Can you add anything?
You mean you want to know who he is?
That's right.
Wilbur French.
Who's that?
He used to play bit parts in pictures.
Yeah.
I recognized him the minute he came through the door.
Miss Wilkers insisted her identification of the check forger was correct. We drove back to the office, checked the name Wilbur French through R&I. We had nothing on him. I telephoned Miss Breckhardt at the SAG. She reported that French was a member in bad standing, 2 years delinquent in his dues. She had no address listed for him, but she was able to tell us that the last company he had worked for was a small TV outfit on Santa Monica Boulevard. She also told us that his file showed that he was last represented by a Paul Pilcher, an agent with offices on Sunset. January 14th, 9:35 a.m. I dropped Frank off at the Santa Monica TV company, and I drove on out to interview Pilcher.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
I'd like to see Mr. Pilcher.
Are you a client?
Police officer. My name's Friday.
Oh.
Mr. Pilcher in?
Not yet.
You expecting him?
Well, I don't know when exactly. Sometimes he plays tennis on Saturday mornings before he comes to the office.
I see.
But he'll be in. He's closing a deal with TRC.
Oh.
That's a studio, a new company just getting started.
Oh, I see.
Would you like to look at the trades while you're waiting? Yesterday's. They don't come out on Saturday.
Well, thank you very much.
Mr. Pilcher in some kind of trouble?
Not as far as I know, no.
That's a relief. Mr. Pilcher's office. I'm sorry he hasn't come in yet. Any minute. Would you like me to have him call you? I see. Well, if you'll try again in about 15 minutes, he ought to be here. Bye. Morning, Mr. Pilcher.
Good morning.
This gentleman's waiting to see you.
Hmm?
And Mr. Brogan's office called. They'll call back. Mr. Brogan's getting shaved.
Yeah, all right. I'm a police officer. My name's Friday.
Police?
That's right.
What can I do for you?
I'd like to talk to you for a minute.
All right, come on inside. Sit down.
Thank you. You handle an actor named Wilbur French, Mr. Pilcher?
French?
That's right.
No, I don't handle him.
He used to be his agent, didn't you?
Oh, a couple of years ago, not anymore.
Oh.
What's he done?
Could you tell me where I could find him?
I wouldn't have any idea. I don't think he's had much work lately. At least I haven't heard about him working.
What was his last address?
Oh, you come to the wrong man.
Well, the last address that you have for him, by the way.
I don't keep addresses of actors after they leave me.
Well, why did he leave you?
Usual reason, no work. Pretty bad as an actor. Excuse me, huh? Yes? I'll put him on. Hello, George. How are you? Glad to hear it. And Mabel? Oh, that's a shame. Seems to be a lot of it going around this time of year. Well, what about Harvey? You make up your mind? Uh-huh. I sure don't agree with you there, George. He didn't look too old to test. So he's been in the business a few years. You can't hold that against him. What do you mean, a new face? You'll bring out somebody from New York who's been on television 100 times. There won't be anything new about his face. Look, I'm not trying to tell you your business. I'm just trying to set a good actor in the right part. I'll be through soon, Mr. Friday.
Yeah.
That's more like it, George. Now, how many weeks' work? No, George, I've read the script. Davis can't shoot that many scenes in 2 weeks. $1,200 a week, four-week guarantee. Fletcher paid him $1,200 last fall. Go ahead and check. Look, George, if I was a Beverly Hills agent, you know what Harvey cost you? Well, I'm not going to argue with about it. You call Fletcher. He'll tell you what he paid Harvey. I'll be here till noon if you want to make a deal. Bye. Sorry to be so long.
Sure. Any suggestions on how I might get in touch with French?
Screen Actors Guild.
Well, they sent me here.
Oh. Well, what's he done?
We'd rather talk to him.
Well, the last time I saw him, he touched me for $10.
Where was that?
I bumped into him on the street. Is it serious?
It's just a routine investigation. Thanks very much, Mr. Pilcher.
Wait a minute.
Yes, sir?
I suppose I could turn him up. Be a dirty trick, though.
I don't know why.
Well, maybe it's my fault that he's in trouble. I didn't get him enough work. Now I hand him over to you. Makes me a heel, doesn't it?
Well, you might be doing him a favor.
Well, he won't think so.
You said you didn't know where he lived.
Well, I don't.
Well, how will you find out?
Spread the word around that I got a job for him. He'll hear about it.
I see.
He'll turn up.
All right, sir.
Leave your number. When I hear from French, I'll get in touch with you.
Thank you.
I still feel like a heel.
Well, you shouldn't. You called the turn on him.
Mm-hmm.
He's a bad actor. I left Pilcher's office and picked up Frank. The TV company had given him a still photo from the last production in which French had appeared. Two of the check victims readily identified the man in the picture. The third victim was also certain it was the same person who had posed as Allington. January 16th, 3:32 p.m. Paul Pilcher telephoned the office. He told us French was living at a hotel in Hollywood on Selma Avenue. When we got there, the desk clerk said French was in his room, 17B.
This is it.
Yeah.
Who is it?
I'd like to talk to you, French.
Just a minute. Yeah?
We're police officers.
I'd like to ask you some questions.
Downtown.
What is this, a gag?
No, it's no gag.
Well, anybody can get hold of a badge. Who sent you? Mike? Sammy?
Come on, let's go, Frank.
Knock it off. I've been in too many pictures. I can tell actors from cops.
You ever hear of Parker Allington?
Yeah, I've heard of him. Worked with him in pictures. Used to be friends.
I'd give you the right sign his name.
Hmm?
On bad checks.
Now, look, boys, I know why they sent you. I told Mike I got a call this morning about a job. It'd be just like him to pick a time like this. Some practical joker, isn't it?
No, it won't work, French.
What?
Come on, you know who we are and why we're here. Let's go.
It's one of Mike's gags.
Yeah, well, three landladies say different.
Oh.
You want to get your coat?
It was only a few bucks.
It was enough.
How'd you tumble?
One of the landladies knew Allington was dead.
I never figured he was that famous.
She knew you, too.
Me?
That's right.
Couldn't have known I was living here. Who told you?
Come on, let's go.
Pilcher. That's why I wanted to get in touch with me. I should have figured it wasn't about a job. Pilcher, wasn't it?
Come on.
Some agent. Couldn't land a job if your life depended on it. 5 years. Over 5 years I was signed with him. Never had a decent booking. Nothing that lasted. A couple of days here and there. Nothing that lasted.
Well, don't you worry about it.
Huh?
This one will.
Wilbur Carl Flicker, also known as Wilbur French, was found guilty on 3 felony warrants charging forgery. He was sentenced to the state prison as prescribed by Section 470 of the California Penal Code for a period of 1 to 14 years.
Dragnet is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Dragnet, on Tuned to Yesterday from January 25th, 1955 on NBC. You're listening to an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday with your host, Mark Levonier. And now, the adventures of Philip Marlowe broadcast on CBS, a successful program that was sustained by the network, meaning no sponsor in the network paid all costs for time and talent as a service to CBS radio listeners. And the show was in prime time on Saturday nights at 8:30. This next story, The Covered Bridge, stars Gerald Moore from January 14th, 1950.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison or the grave. This time everything that happened, from the orange-haired man with a map past the oaf with a pitchfork to the body at the Covered Bridge, was wrong. Dead wrong.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Covered Bridge.
You know, every once in a while, into the life of one Philip Marlowe, a little peace and quiet must fall. A day marked by neither murder nor mayhem. No phone calls, just nothing. I was just beginning to like it, too, when the door opened and a head full of slick orange hair walked in. It was on a man wearing a new flannel suit, a hand-painted tie, and a reckless grin. He shoved the telephone out of his way, sat down on the corner of my desk, and sized me up with a pair of careful gray eyes.
Got a proposition for you, laddie.
Tell me about it. Let you know if I'm interested.
You should be. There's good money in it.
It's not always the answer. Go ahead.
Got a good car?
Good enough. I don't keep it in the office.
You like Mexico?
Look, is this a social call or a quiz program?
This is business. I asked you a question.
Yeah, I like Mexico. I don't like you.
Well, that's good, because you're going to drive a couple of friends of me down there. Name your price.
Not interested.
$1,000?
Not interested.
That's too bad. Would have been nicer to work this out without a gun.
Listen, you two-bit jerk.
Talk easy, laddie. This gun is bigger than both of us. Now, you're going to drive across the Mexican border tonight with three passengers, and there won't be any difficult questions, because you are the well-known Senor Philip Marlowe, a respectable private detective. Somewhere below the border, your fellow travelers will catch a boat. But this you don't have to worry about.
Now, look, just a minute.
Look, laddie, I came to you for several reasons, one of which is that you're smart enough to know when to quit fighting the problem. We got to make a stop first, so let's go. And leave your artillery in the drawer. Come on.
Yeah, sure. Since I'm now an old pal of yours, what do I call you?
You pick it.
Believe me, you won't like it.
How about George? You like George?
Not particularly.
Good. Just call me George. Let's go, Marlowe.
We nodded at the elevator girl, waved goodbye to the kid in the parking lot, and headed south on Highway 101. All with the front of that Mauser nudging my kidney. It was screwy, but I was on my way to Mexico.
Don't get ambitious, Marlowe. Not too fast, not too slow. Just keep it rolling, nice and steady.
I did what I was told and watched for a break. For every foot of 100 miles down the coast. At Oceanside, we cut inland past Escondido and up into the citrus country. Once he dug a little map from his pocket and studied it while we headed into the hills where farms were farther apart. George was busy looking for a turnoff when my chance came, and it came fast. My foot slammed down hard on the brake. George's head slipped the windshield, and the gun slipped out of his hand. I dropped 2 wheels in the ditch, but I got the gun. He took one look, then jumped out and ran in a low crouch for the back of the car. Before I could follow him, I heard the truck coming. It was a big two-section job rolling fast. It topped the rise just as George pivoted toward the road. The truck driver must have seen him just as he hit. But the air brakes locked on all 26 wheels at the same time. I ran to where George lay like a discarded doll at the side of the road. The truck driver was out of his cab before it stopped rolling.
I didn't see him. I didn't see him. I come over the rise there. I didn't see him.
Take it easy.
Honest, I didn't see him. Is he all right? He ain't dead, is he?
No, he isn't. He won't be walking much anymore.
It wasn't my fault, Mr. Honest.
I know it wasn't. Get hold of yourself.
Gosh, what should we do?
I want you to drive to the nearest phone and get the police and then come back. Here's my card. Give it to the troopers. Tell them they can reach me at my office.
Yeah, what are you going
to
do?
If I can figure out how to read this map of his, I'm going to pay a call on a couple of people who are expecting this guy. Maybe it's just a stubborn streak, but when I'm being used as a patsy, I like to meet the people involved. As I drove, I studied the map, and 2 miles down the highway, I found the first landmark, a dead tree. There I left the highway and followed a rocky trail 7 corkscrew miles up a canyon to the next landmark, a bridge. One that looked like it had been lifted out of some rustic Connecticut woods and dropped across the California Gorge purely by mistake. Because it was covered complete to roof and walls and made entirely of lumber. And on the hill beyond was a lonely house where the trail marked on the map ended. I drove slowly through the sagging wood tunnel and at the other end deliberately killed my motor. And I got out, raised the hood, went to work on the distributor. I don't know where he came from, but when I glanced up, he was standing there watching me. A bull in overalls with a pitchfork clenched in a pair of hands as thick as $4 stakes. We didn't like each other's looks.
You picked a bad place for trouble, mister.
That's so. Why?
Nobody almost never comes up this road, especially strangers. How come you took it?
Really want to know, or are you just killing time?
I wouldn't be too smart if I was you, mister.
You live in that house up there?
No, not anymore. I got canned for drinking. But why are you so interested in that place?
The only farm around here. Maybe they got a mechanic.
Yeah, maybe. Where'd you say you were from?
L.A.
Los Angeles, huh? You real sure you don't know anybody up there on the hill?
Like who, for instance?
A certain party who took a trip to L.A. not so long ago. And another thing, city boy, don't get out of line or I'll fix you good. Understand?
I mean, how do you do?
You want something?
Yes, my car stalled at the bottom of the hill.
Dolly, who is it? Who's there?
A man, Uncle Walter. He says his car broke down.
What's that? Your car broke down, you say?
Yeah, I don't know what went wrong, Mr.
My name is Brule, Walter Brule.
Oh, I'm glad to know you. I'm Philip Marlowe.
What are you doing on this road, Mr. Marlowe?
I thought it was a shortcut.
Did you? Well, you were wrong. It's a dead end.
Oh.
Come inside.
Thanks. Look, Mr. Brule, I'd like to have somebody who knows motors come down and look at my car, huh?
Mm-hmm. All right, when Ed comes in, I guess he could go down with you.
That's
my new hired hand, Ed Fry.
Oh.
I don't know, Uncle Walter. It's getting pretty dark.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing myself. As a matter of fact, if you can accommodate me, Mr. Brule, I'd just as soon rest up a while and shove off in the morning. I want to pay you for everything, of course.
Stay overnight? I'm afraid that's impossible.
Impossible? Why? What's the matter with you, Dolly? If necessary, I'm sure we can arrange to take care of Mr. Marlowe some way.
Well, okay.
Well, that's better. Now, if you want me, Dolly, I'll be out in the barn. Make yourself comfortable, Mr. Marlowe.
Your uncle, huh? He owns this place?
That's right. My mother was his favorite sister.
Oh.
You want a cup of coffee?
Oh, I'd love it. Haven't had any farm kitchen coffee in ages. You don't seem to have any visitors up this way, Dolly, huh?
No, not many.
Nice farm, though.
Stinks.
Is that why you run off to L.A. now and then?
How did you know about that?
I guessed. I ran into a friend of yours at the bottom of the hill. A pair of overgrown shoulders with a pitchfork. Said he used to work here.
Him. He did up until a month ago. That's Noah Bickman. Big dumb goof. Here's your cup.
Oh, thanks.
By the way, Mr. Marlowe, where are you heading?
Oh, Mexico, maybe.
Mexico?
Yeah.
You kind of came a long ways out of your way, didn't you?
Did I?
Dolly!
We're in here, Eddie. What's the matter?
The car at the bottom of the hill. Whose is it? The
car belongs to me. It's stalled.
Who are you?
This is Mr. Marlowe, Eddie. He's on his way to Mexico.
Well, you don't say.
And since his car broke down so late, he may stay all night. Uncle Walter said it'd be all right.
Is that a fact?
I'll go get some blankets, Eddie, so you can take them up to the spare room for Mr. Marlowe.
Okay, Dolly. Mr. Marlowe, huh? Where are you from, Mr. Marlowe?
L.A. You?
Points east.
Huh.
You know, this road don't go to Mexico, Marlowe. In fact, it stops about a mile up the draw here. Kind of funny that you wound up on it, isn't it?
I don't see you breaking up over it, Eddie.
Don't let my poker face throw you, pal. Traveling alone, are you?
I am now.
Meaning what?
That there's nobody with me. That's simple, isn't it?
Not in my book, pal. I might even want you to draw me a picture of that one.
Here's the blanket, Eddie. Sheet.
Oh, okay, it's fine. Come on upstairs, Marlowe. I'll show you the room.
You want me to go with you and make the bed?
No, you stay here and put up some more coffee, Dolly.
All right.
Got a hunch I may want lots of it tonight. Let's go, Marlowe.
Right behind you, Eddie.
How's the weather been in L.A.?
Some might call it hot.
Uh-huh. Yeah, at the door, will you?
Sure.
Okay, how come it's you, pal?
I got good credentials, a car, and a tight yap.
You better be right on all three. How'd you find me?
Little map, Eddie. From Escondido to the dead tree to the covered bridge, and then up here, it's a cinch.
Why'd you show alone? Where's Red?
Gotta meet us at the border.
It's a bum fit, pal. It's not in the book. Why?
He had some kind of a last-minute jam with the boat.
Oh, that jerk. He's had a month to line this up while I've been holed up out here in the sticks making like a farmhand. Well, better work, that's all. If we're picked up this time, it's curtains. Oh, incidentally, you got a gun, haven't you?
Yeah, sure.
Let's see it.
No dice, Eddie. Red didn't tell me everything, just enough.
So?
So you'll get your money's worth. I'll do what I'm supposed to do and no questions asked, for my little automatic and I stick together regardless, real close, together.
Okay, Marlo. Suit yourself.
I will. And something else. The rest of the company is going along. Is that all set?
Well, we'll see about that when the time comes.
You're not leaving any loose ends around, are you?
It's not your worry, pal. We'll get out of here around 11. Oh, and that routine about your car being stalled, it is a gag, I hope.
Oh, sure, it won't start. If anybody tries, but in 10 seconds with a screwdriver, I can fix it.
You're okay, Marlo. Just keep playing your game.
Yeah, I will. Maybe then I'll find out what the score is after all.
You might at that. Come on, let's eat.
Dinner at the Brule farm was as loaded with gay chatter as a bad case of lockjaw. And when it was over, the participants scattered like everybody else was contagious. I wound up alone in the dark spare room on the second floor, which had one advantage. Windows that viewed both the front and the rear. The moon was bright, so I didn't bother with a lamp. I listened to Dolly rattle dishes in the kitchen until that stopped, and then I watched old man Brule pace his front yard. Once Ed Fry went out and talked to him briefly and then headed for the front door again. For a long hour after that, the big house was silent until from somewhere out in the back, there was a soft metallic tapping. Eventually, I spotted a heavy figure outside tossing pebbles against a window pane downstairs. And he edged back through the shadows to the barn. A moment later, I saw the girl slip out a rear door and run across the backyard to join him. I went down the back stairs and out along the house to a hedge, and I followed that until I was close enough
to hear. It's true, I tell you. He's an escaped convict, a killer. He's been hiding out here on your place.
I can't believe it, Nora. I just can't. Are you sure?
Of course I am. I read it by accident just tonight in an old newspaper from Denver. The whole story with pictures. There's no doubt about it. Ed Fry is really Eddie Fillmore. He's a murderer, plenty of times over.
What do we do? Should we call the police?
No, not on your life. Listen, you want to get off this farm, don't you?
More than anything in the world.
Okay, then we'll do it together, Dolly. I didn't tell another soul about this. You know why? Because they put out a reward, a big one for him. $2,500, and we're going to get it. Just us, you and me.
But how, Noah? How can we possibly... What's that? Did you hear that, Noah?
That's nothing. It's one of the cats, maybe. Look, you've been taking walks with him lately, Dolly.
Well, yes, I have, Noah, but...
Well, never mind that now. Just get him to take another one right away. Get him to walk you down to Pritchard's house. I'll be waiting there, and as soon as you get inside, I'll jump him. You'll never know what hit him. Will you do it?
Pritchard's house?
Yeah.
Well, I'll try. You give me some time to persuade him.
Sure. Oh, I knew you'd see things my way, honey.
With
that reward money, there'll be no stopping us. You better go in now before they miss you.
Okay. I'll get him there just as soon as I can.
Hey, Bickman.
What? Who's there?
Marlo. Listen, I gotta talk to you.
You were here listening all the time, weren't you?
Yeah, and believe me, you're making a mistake. You're playing with dynamite, Bickman. You two are nuts to tackle that guy alone. He's too tough for you.
So you want to help so you can cut yourself in on the reward, that's all. Well, it ain't gonna work.
Don't be a sap. He's covered himself. There's somebody else in with him. Somebody around here. He's got an ally. You two try to grab him and you're gonna be in trouble.
You're lying. He's been hiding out all alone, and we're going to get him, Dolly and me, by ourselves. And if you try to horn in, mister, so help me, I'll beat your brain.
Cut it out. Reward or no reward, you got to listen to me.
I got nothing to do. Maybe that'll teach you not to stick your nose in, city boy.
I didn't pass out. But my jaw hurt and my legs moved like they were rubber. Now I had to find the roving Walter Brühl because he should know where Pritchard's house was, where the ambitious team of Dolly and Noah might be biting off a lot more than they could chew, healthy 4-H teeth notwithstanding. Mr. Brühl! Mr. Brühl!
Yeah? Hello? Who is it?
Marlowe. Come here a minute, will you? It's important.
Yeah, important? Now, what is it, Mr. Marlowe? But...
Ah, your face. Or assist.
He's your friend Noah. We had a few words.
Noah Bickman? He was no friend of mine.
Yeah, he's no friend of mine either. Look, Brühl, I'm going to have to trust you. I've got no choice. Bickman found out Ed Fry is really an undesirable named Eddie Fillmore is wanted for the police by murder.
Murder?
And he wants to trap him for a $2,500 reward that's been posted and didn't want me in the way.
No.
Now, look. I'm not a passing tourist with motor trouble, but a private detective. Tell me, who is Pritchard and where does he live?
Pritchard? Where does he live? Mr. Marlowe, somebody has been making a joke on you. Elihu Pritchard died 20 years ago. He lived right in this house where I do today.
This is Pritchard's house here?
Oh, Pritchard's house? No, no, no. That is down the road near your car. The covered bridge. That is Pritchard's house.
The bridge?
Yeah, you see, Elihu Pritchard was from New England, and he had a covered bridge on his farm there. So he wanted one here. He built it himself day by day, a board here, a nail there.
Oh, and since he spent so much time at it, people call the bridge his house. Is that it?
Yeah, exactly. But then, why is it important?
Because of a meeting, Mr. Brühl, a get-together that I don't think is going to be on the quiet side. Let me borrow your flashlight, will you?
Sure.
Now get back inside and call the police.
But what are you going to do?
Reinforce the reward, happy sweethearts, and keep an eye out for someone I haven't met yet. A third party Eddie Fillmore plans to tour Mexico with. It was a quarter of a mile romp, country style, back down to the covered bridge. When I was there, the Mauser I'd recovered from George in one hand, flashlight in the other, I found only the moon-washed, gray-covered bridge itself, trying to stand erect like an old soldier who has more pride than posture. But then as I stepped on the chalk road onto the sheltered oil-soaked planking, I found something else. Inside and face down was Noah Bickman. And lying nearby, the red-stained, icy fingers of the pitchfork that had killed him. I started to move closer. But then footsteps from the road behind suggested that I do different, so I moved quickly back to the bridge entrance, flattened myself into a narrow shadow, and waited.
Noah? Noah, is that you?
It's Marlowe, Dolly.
What? Mr. Marlowe, what are you doing here? Why are you down at the bridge at this hour? Where's Noah?
He's dead, Dolly. Huh?
Was dead.
He's in there, but don't go inside. Look, I tried to stop him, believe me.
Stop him? Stop him
from
what?
Don't bother, baby. I know about Fry being Fillmore, the reward, all of it.
What? How?
Well, first of all, I'm a private detective from L.A., was dragged into this by an ex-buddy of Fillmore's. Second, I was in the barn when you and Noah made your plans. Oh. When you left, I tried to talk Noah into accepting my help.
Why?
Because I know what Fillmore's kind is like. I mix with them every day. I know how they work. Look, did you tell Fillmore to meet you here, yes or no?
No. No, I couldn't find him. I've been looking since I left the barn every place.
That's why you came down here just now?
Yes. I wanted to tell Noah that our plan would have to be postponed. But what difference does all this make?
I don't know. Maybe a little, maybe a lot. If Fillmore had known about this rendezvous you two planned, it'd be 20-1 that he got here ahead of schedule and took care of Noah.
But since he didn't...
Yeah, since he didn't, I'm betting on a third party, someone we haven't met yet.
A third party?
Yeah, now listen to me and do just as I say. Turn around and walk straight back up to the house, and when you get there, get inside and stay put.
But, Marlowe, what is...
Go on, fast.
All right. But be careful, Marlowe. Whoever killed Noah won't hesitate to kill you, too.
When she started back up the road, I turned toward the bridge again. My flashlight following the dusty white footprints on the freshly oiled planking leading to the dead man. I stood over in the circle of light sweeping the area around him. There was just one thing I had to know.
Marlowe! Marlowe! Me, Walter Brewer.
What are you doing down here?
Well, I thought you might need help, so after I called the police, I got my rifle and came down here, and I...
Hickman? Yeah, he's dead. The prongs on that fork went right through him.
How terrible.
Yeah. Look, Brewer, was this planking freshly oiled today?
Yeah, why?
I just wanted to make sure those chalk footprints were made today.
But what do footprints...
Brewer, you stay here and see that no one enters the bridge.
But where are you going?
Up to your house in a hurry, because I think I know who the killer and the third party is. City-bred legs and smog-fed lungs, I made it up to the house in record time. But as I reached for the front door, I knew that time hadn't been quite good enough. The shot had come from somewhere in the house, and by the time I reached the living room, I knew I was too late to do any good. In a chair at the far side of the room, Dolly was slouched down, a surprised expression on her face, while her hands tried to hold back a small stain of blood oozing through her blouse. Little, frightened words whispered out of her mouth.
You shouldn't have done it, Eddie.
Stand where you are, Marlowe. She had it coming to her, the two-timing louse.
Eddie, I'm trying to tell you. You don't understand.
I understand plenty, you no good little...
Eddie.
I was in the barn, heard the whole thing. You and that Bickman planning a switch with me out.
No, you're wrong, Eddie.
Dolly didn't try to double-cross you, Eddie. She only pretended to so she could set Noah Bickman up and kill him. That's what she did.
No, you're a liar.
That's what I tried to tell Eddie.
I don't believe it. True, Marlowe? She didn't cross me. She was trying to help me.
That's right, Fillmore. Bickman found out who you were, wanted the $2,500 you were worth, dead or alive. Dolly had to play him along for your sake.
I should have listened to her. I should have listened. How do you know all this, Marlowe?
Found Dolly's footprints inside the covered bridge. Proof she'd been there before I found Bickman's body.
Yeah. And you know who I was, so you put it all together.
Well, you're holding the gun, kid. What's the next move?
Doesn't matter much anymore. I could still lam out of here for Mexico. Somehow I don't want to. Not without Dolly. Phone the police, Marlowe. I'm not going anywhere.
Several hours before the county police and Eddie Fillmore had gone, Walter Brule and I sat at the long wooden table watching the light from the fire dance across the hanging skillets and pans by the grate. And nobody said anything for a long time.
I suppose hot apple pie at 4 in the morning seems odd to a man from the city.
Not at all. 4 in the morning, sometimes middle of the day in the city.
Yeah. Yeah. More coffee, Mr. Marlowe?
Yeah, please. Thanks.
You know, Dolly wasn't really a bad girl. It was just that sometimes she didn't think. And...
A woman who loves like that doesn't think, Mr. Brule. Just feels.
Maybe in some way it's my fault, the whole thing.
No, no. It's nobody's fault, Mr. Brule. She was trying to do the right thing for the guy she loved.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, your bed is still ready if you care to stay.
Oh, thanks. Sure, I'd like to.
If you can find your own way up, I think I'll... sit here just a minute longer.
Sure. Night.
Good night, Mr. Marlowe.
As I sat looking out over the starlit countryside, I thought of all the great love stories written about the good people who love, live, and suffer. And then the pathetic face of Dolly and the pain-racked face of Eddie said, "What about us?" And I had no answer. Yeah, chalk up another one, Marlowe. Another one of those things for which there is no answer.
Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Norman McDonald and are written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 14th of January, 1950, on CBS. And so closes this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for listening.